Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mac Show. I am Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin, as usual. And also, as usual, amazing panel. And let's just jump right in and meet everyone that's here, because I'm sure all of these people are brand new faces for all of you, at least brand new just for today. Patrice, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I was just looking like what the panel, the amazing panel you're talking about is. But best human does.
I did. And, you know, no pressure. No pressure.
Okay. All right. All right. No, I'm doing good. I'm finally week back from, like, after sick leave is over. Still, my voice is not 100%, but I'm getting there. I'm so looking forward to being able to go outside again.
I can appreciate that.
Two more days.
And it's great that you are still with us. So it's good to see you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Also, Chuck, I'm glad you're still with us. How are you?
Well, yeah, so far. What time is it? Yes, you know.
My time, it's only a 9:15 in the morning. So there's still plenty of time.
Okay. Well, I checked my pulse before the show and I'm still here. So that's good.
That's great.
Yeah. Everything's under control. No, nothing to report that I want to report here anyway. So.
Awesome. And, but I did notice you're wearing a red shirt. So.
That's not good.
I don't know if it's safe to include you on the away team.
It just depends on whether you want to keep me around or not.
Good point. But Dave, you're in a blue shirt, so you're safe. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's Friday, glad to be here, and fun stuff ahead here.
The smart one. I did like all kinds of colors, so I'm safe.
I think you're totally safe. Yep.
You only get flesh wounds, Patrice.
Yeah, that's fine.
Right, you'll be standing right behind Chuck. And since I'm wearing the black shirt, that means that I stay behind on the ship.
No, you're part of section, what was it, 31?
I'm part of section 31.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Got the special badge and everything.
Yeah, fancy badge. Right. And for those of you that don't know what section 31 is.
Not important.
You're not supposed to know.
Exactly.
Yeah, it would take way too long to explain.
And then we'd have to kill you.
That's what Google's for.
Pretty much.
Yep. All right. Well, since we're done talking Star Trek, apparently, for the moment, anyhow, let's hop into some news stories. And let's start with the one that really annoys me. This is the news that Apple has turned on the ability for developers to automatically increase subscription rates without needing your approval as a user to make that increase happen. So that was a really convoluted way to say that. Okay, so here's what it was before. If a developer is going to increase the rate of their subscription, a dialogue pops up for you, and you have to explicitly agree to that. And if you don't, then your subscription gets canceled. Now the way it works is a developer can send you a dialogue saying, "Hey, we are we're increasing the subscription rate, and now you're just automatically opted in." And I think this is a horrible plan. Now, they can't just do this across the board. There are certain limitations, but they can just increase your rate now on your subscriptions. Anyhow, I am not pleased with this, and I'm curious what all of you think.
I'm wondering why you're not pleased with this already. Like, for me, this is a no-brainer. This it should be the way Apple is now doing it.
Interesting.
Just, I mean, looking at it from a developer's perspective, if I want to increase the price, and I'm not one of the insane people who is scaring people and wants to increase everything by like 5,000% and have everybody mm-hmm. opt in, because I think that would be a problem.
That would be a problem.
Like a small increase up to $5, I think up to 50 if it's a yearly subscription, is totally reasonable to say, hey, we're going to do this. And you have to, like Apple is sending you emails and they send you pop-ups or whatever and say, hey, this is going to happen. So you got ample opportunity to cancel, but at some point the subscription should increase. And that's what it is.
Okay, and I'm with you. And I agree in part. The problem that I'm having is that I feel that this should still be opt-in and not opt-out.
Well, it is still opt-in, because if you opt out, then the subscription ends.
Right, but the way I understand it, for opt-out to work, this isn't just you saying no. This is you having to go into your settings and cancel the subscription.
Yeah, but in the email and in the dialog that Apple shows, I'm pretty sure there's a button, manage subscription, that you tap and you land exactly on the page. That's usually how Apple does it. I mean, that's Apple, how Apple has even done it with the opt-ins that you had so far.
Well, and as usual, we're talking about this before it happens, before we see exactly how it would be implemented. But Jeff, I'm kind of on Patrice's side with this. I mean, first of all, the article says, and I've seen this now from several sources, Apple says it will always notify users of the pricing in advance via mm-hmm. email, push notification, and a message within the app. Okay. And mm-hmm. and then it,
which is good.
Maybe. Yeah. And Patrice, maybe to your point, Apple will also provide instructions on how to view, manage, and cancel subscriptions. So I think I would rather have it continue. I mean, I don't want my subscription to automatically cancel because the provider decided to up the subscription.
Yeah. And you didn't do anything about it.
Right. That would be, I guess, if it's something I depended on, and let's just say, you know, I'm out traveling or something and I'm using that application or service and I'm not sitting there managing, you know, my subscriptions on a daily basis or paying attention to those things, I would much rather, you know, have it renew. Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, again, I think Apple's been pretty smart about this because they've put limitations in as to what the increases can be. So,
which is good.
You have a bit, yeah. So you have a bit of a safety net in the event that something happens. Now, the only thing that I didn't see in this article, and I haven't seen anywhere else, is if 3 days after I decide to, you know, let me try again. 3 days after it renews at that higher rate and I don't want it, do I get a prorated refund? And I would kind of think it would depend on, you know, what the subscription is, but most of these things are monthly. So mm-hmm. an annual subscription, probably not. But so the most, in theory, I would get burned with is a month of whatever that higher subscription is, again, unless it's an annual subscription.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And as you said, it's actually better this way for a user than it would be if you had to opt in to the increase, because I mean, let's face it, what's going to happen? The service is not going to continue at the lower price at some point, because if they wanted to do that, they would just do that. Mm-hmm. Just have a separate in-app purchase with a higher price and say, okay, everybody who has the old price keeps the old price. Everybody who has the new price gets the new price. So what would happen is at some point it would just get canceled. And I think that is a worse experience for the users, because then you have to figure out what happened and resubscribe and all of that, instead of just saying, okay, hey, this is going to increase. If you want to cancel, here's how to do it.
All right. So Patrice, you and Chuck have both said things that are helping me understand why I am having such a problem with this and other people aren't. And I think what it comes down to is I have a completely different philosophy about how I manage subscriptions. Like I know exactly what I have for subscriptions. I know exactly what I'm doing with each one. And I have total control over those subscriptions. Mm-hmm. I think I am the exception. I think most people have their subscriptions and I mean, they will generally know what they have, but if something were to change and they didn't explicitly agree to that change, you know, a price increase, which is the way I want it, then they end up with a bad experience, which you pointed out, Patrice, because they don't understand why the app or the service that they've been using just suddenly stopped.
Yeah. Right. It's kind of like when Netflix all of a sudden stops working. Is that what you want?
It depends on what I'm watching. No, of course not. That's not what I want.
Yeah, you say... Forgive me, David, but I want to ask Jeff, and then he can decide where he answers it. But you say you have total control over your subscriptions. How do you have total control? And I mean, logistically, you know, our spreadsheet, calendar, app, service. How are you tracking your subscriptions so that you feel comfortable in saying that you have total control?
I have all of my subscriptions in OmniFocus. And so OmniFocus gives me an alert about each subscription as it's due to renew. So a couple days before my subscription is due, I sound crazy, don't I? But a couple days before my subscription is due, I actually get an alert on my phone from OmniFocus telling me that my renewal is about to happen, at which point I decide, do I want to allow that subscription to continue to automatically renew or not? And
don't you get an email from Apple anyway, even for a monthly subscription that it's renewing?
Yes, and you get an email from Apple letting you know about subscription renewals that are about to happen or payments that are about to happen. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's... you know, for me, really what it's coming down to is the difference between opt-out and opt-in. And with the way I have everything set up, the new system where I can appreciate this is going to be good for some people, it's going to annoy the living crap out of me.
Yeah, I'm like you, Jeff. I mean, I monitor everything I subscribe to. A lot of it's in my head, as I have good memory when it comes to remembering what I've subscribed to. But yeah, Apple does do a decent job that they give you an email, send you an email saying, hey, this is about to be renewed, and you get, you know, push notifications if you got that on, and then they'll let you know that it's coming. But I'm kind of with you in the fact that, yeah, I want to be able to, if I want to be able to opt out, I want to be able to opt out and be told that this is going to be happening. If the price increases this much, I mean, a good example, I was subscribed to itpro.tv. That's a good example. And it's kind of expensive, even though my company's paying for it. I just say, you know, I haven't really used it much. I'm gonna cancel. So they send the notification that says, hey, this is coming up for renewal. And I think about it. That's what my point is. I'm giving the option to be able to think about it. So and then it turned out after I canceled, all of a sudden I get an email back from them say, hey, we could get you a better price. So
how about that?
Yeah, $100 too. So I mean, it was so just another example that I agree with you in your sense, Jeff, that I want to be able to have the control of, okay, I want to be notified that the price is increasing, and it's my choice to opt in or opt out.
Well, and you do. You get multiple notifications, and you can decide if you're okay with it or cancel.
Right, but this seems like this may happen without being notified. That's what I'm concerned
about. Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, like the price increase, as I said, it's $5 for a monthly subscription, or up to $5, I should say, because it is at the maximum 50% of your subscription price, or $5, whatever is lower.
Yeah.
And 5% or 50 for the yearly.
And it doesn't, I mean, most of the subscriptions I've been part of, I haven't seen too terribly a big amount of increases over the years. You know, when Disney Plus increased theirs, they forewarned people well ahead in advance. So,
except for Netflix.
Netflix. Yeah. We lost all these subscribers. We're increasing the price. And they just, yeah, give you a month to let you know. But, you know, I mean, I pay yearly for Disney. I pay yearly for Paramount Plus because I don't want to deal with it and have to think about it, because it was both those are both services I enjoy. So now I'm locked in for a year, and hopefully hopefully the price doesn't increase anytime soon. Same thing with Apple. You know, we do the Apple One bundle. I pay for that every month, and that hasn't increased, knock on wood. But so I think they've done a good job of it. But I guess, you know, if anything, this article probably kind of made you kind of think that this was a thing that isn't going to be so good. But I'm kind of seeing it now as we've talked about this.
All right. Well,
I got to throw this in. All of David's points are completely valid, except for the fact that they aren't in the App Store. And I subscribe to a number of things, and I find it quite annoying. And I can think of one right off the top that happened very recently that sent me a message saying, "Oh, we've renewed your account for another year. Thank you so much." And it's like, I didn't think that was coming up yet. Now, first of all, that's bad practice on their part. And you feel just a little hoodwinked when that happens. But also, you know, I think there's a thing about responsibility here. I'm responsible for tracking my subscriptions. So if part of it is on me, it would have been nice if they let me know. And most of the services, I think, are seeing the light and doing that, but not everybody is doing it. And unfortunately, too, sometimes, oh, your service is renewing tomorrow. And it's like, well, okay, if I don't get to the email, then guess what? I'm subscribed. I know, like my domain registrar is fantastic. They warn you like 30 days out, 7 days out, 60. Yeah. I mean, you get multiple things. It's like, I almost don't want them, but on the other hand, they are over communicating, which is probably a lot more desirable. So it kind of depends on which way you go here. You know,
well, the subscriptions I have, like Paramount Plus and Disney Plus, I have them in Apple. So,
Oh, do you? Oh, okay.
I'm paying them through Apple directly through their subscriptions. So that's why I did that, because it's easy to be reminded, and it's not an issue, and then you don't have to go to multiple places. Yeah, that's what's great about subscriptions in the App Store is the fact that it's all listed there, and you just go in there and from time to time and look at your subscriptions. You know, like I subscribe as a plus member for Pocket Cast, or some people do Overcast and some of those other apps that you pay. Those are nominal amounts, but you know, of course, Netflix and Amazon Prime and those don't let you do that, so because they don't want they don't give any of their cut to Apple. So
right. Bob Beach is in line with you, Dave, about the App Store and subscriptions. He says one of the real advantages of subscriptions through the App Store is that they are easy to manage. And that's absolutely true. And that is, to me, one of the nice benefits of the App Store.
100%.
Yep. All right. Well, Patrice, let's revisit this in a few months and see if I have changed my attitude towards this.
Okay. And I will ask you again in a couple months.
Yes, please do. And if I'm still all bitchy about it, well, there we go. But, you know, it's very possible that that I will have changed my mind after seeing how this is working in real world use. And so we'll see.
Siri, remind me to ask Jeff Gamet about his subscriptions in 6 months.
Sweet. Bob Beach is saying that I just need to put a reminder in OmniFocus.
Yeah, actually you do.
I do. All right. Okay.
It's about subscriptions in 6 months.
Top priority. Okay, next story. It turns out that I'm not the only person that's bitchy about Apple stuff. It turns out that film and video, TV, movie makers are kind of annoyed with Final Cut Pro. And so they wrote an open letter to Apple last month saying, hey, here's a list of stuff you really need to fix because what the hell? And Apple has now responded to this open letter. It took them about a month, but they responded. And the response is, yep, we hear you. And a lot of stuff that's on your list is stuff that we're looking at addressing. And to me, this is very interesting because I feel like it's not that long ago where Apple would not have acknowledged this letter at all. It's and when I say not that long ago, I'm talking about in the terms of the grand scheme of the company. Because maybe this is a post Steve Jobs thing where Apple's more open about responding.
There is precedence for this. I think even in the Steve Jobs era, because when they released Final Cut 10, there were a lot of complaints. Oof. And there were a couple open letters even, I think. I do remember that Apple actually addressed them officially. So I'm guessing my feeling is that it's probably a little bit something that the industry likes to do, these kinds of open letters. I mean, you know, the movie industry kind of runs on publicity.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, so I have a feeling that this is, this is just how they operate. They get together, they write a letter, they publish it, and then Apple responds. Honestly, I don't know how I haven't seen any reactions to the response. I'm not sure Apple addressed anything.
You know, it's funny you should say that because I feel like Apple hasn't addressed things with Final Cut for a long time. Now, granted, Apple set themselves up to have a difficult process with Final Cut because they had to throw out the whole code base and start over, and they couldn't build something in a reasonable time frame that had all the features of what was there before, and so they're building
and I don't
up.
Think they wanted to.
That's an interesting point. Yeah,
I don't think they wanted to because they said, I mean, Final Cut, what was it, 7? I think the previous version was still there, and Final Cut 10 was a rewrite and some features will not make it. And I think they were very clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, they have, from my perspective, like using it more for YouTube stuff and so on, they have done a lot of things over time. Is it perfect? No. There is stuff that's missing. And I think the I don't want to call them complaints because I think they're like reasonable concerns that those people talked about. Are valid. But Apple has done, like, if you look at it, it's been silent. Like, they didn't talk about it too much, but there has been a steady stream of updates, a steady stream of new things that they introduced, a steady stream of improvements they did. Like, it's never a flashy event where they showed everything. I think every now and then they would do like a little demo here and there, but never a flashy event. But they've been very constantly updating it. There's like every couple of months, there's a new update with new feature.
Mm-hmm. Which is good.
And yeah, I think I find this really interesting because just about the time I was coming into being interested in video editing, I started to try to learn Final Cut 7 and was getting there. And then Final Cut 10 came out. And so I didn't have a lot of the optimized workflows that a lot of people had. And obviously was not a professional, but 10 was a revelation. It was, for me, it was so much easier to use. Now, it still didn't have some of the features that I wanted, or even in my primitive state then and now. But, you know, Patrice is right. They've continually improved it. And I go back and draw sort of a parallel to what they did with Keynote and Pages and Numbers, you know, that at one point they said, okay, we need to start over. And for a good reason, because that they were needed to add the capabilities for iOS and iPadOS and bring it all into line. And so we lost some of the features there. I think the features still haven't come back. But again, you see pretty regular updates. And I don't mean regular as in every month or anything, but, you know, pretty regular updates that bring in new features and bring back some old features. I think you're right. This letter doesn't exactly address anything, but the fact that they even responded to it is a huge change in Apple's culture.
Which is of the things that I was asked in the original letter. If you go to it, one of the big asks was that Apple makes a public statement of their commitment to this. Because as I said, they've been very silent about it. I said, there was, I think, in when they released the M1, I think they showed off Final Cut and showed off some new features. But for the most part, it's been very silent. And that was one of the big complaints that they're saying, we want Apple to state publicly that they're behind this and that they continue to improve this and add the things that were still missing. They're not asking for really, if you look at it, they're not asking for really individual features. They're just saying, we've asked for stuff and we love this product, but we want Apple's commitment that is continuing.
I think that's a reasonable request.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like the request is coming from people that are using Final Cut and want to continue using Final Cut. Apple lost a lot of people with the Final Cut 7 to 10 transition because all of a sudden there was a lot of stuff that just wasn't there. Those people went to Avid, those people went to Premiere, and they've been invested in those platforms for years now. They're not going to switch back. So, or it's not likely they will switch back. So, this is Apple addressing current users and potential future users that probably aren't switching from other platforms.
Yeah, that was one of the things they asked for or that they applauded Apple for, that they're trying to like introduce certifications and trainings and stuff. there was one sentence, and I put it in a chat in the original letter. They said, we hope you will encourage our industry to see Final Cut Pro as a professional choice for editors of future award-winning TV shows and movies and for millions more editors all over the world. And I think that's what it boils down to. That's what they wanted. And Apple, as I said, the letter itself is kind of an acknowledgement, but they haven't said all that much. I mean, the letter is very short, to be honest. It's like, oh, by the way, we're launching new training.
Yeah, cool. And I one thing I can speak from experience on that, because back in the early days of that transition, and I hate going back there because as far as I'm concerned, it's ancient history, but there's still people that really, you know, still have the scars from that. But there were capabilities there that people were complaining about. They just hadn't learned how to use it yet. Because I distinctly remember that in a couple cases. If you ask me what they are, I'm sorry, I don't remember. but I remember thinking, you know, well, that's interesting. It's just there's certain things, there's a little bit new way of doing things. And we all know how people hate, you know, anything that interferes with their workflows. But you know,
and I mean, don't forget, there is a whole ecosystem around Final Cut. It's not just Final Cut, it's all the plugins and the tools that work with it and all of that. Yeah. So yeah,
but
I think that what the letter really does is it, and I think that's also there's one sentence in there that Apple would like to work with those people. I think that's what the letter really says. It says, okay, hey, like we're hearing you, and you would like to talk to you more to see what we can do. That's all it is.
It's, you know, it's not a detailed answer, but I think it's still
an answer.
It's an answer. And Apple acknowledging the letter and what's being said in the letter and saying, hey, we want to talk with you about this. That seems promising to me. Yeah. If Apple didn't have any genuine interest in maintaining Final Cut and addressing features and issues that people have, they wouldn't have responded to the letter at all.
It's true.
Right. Just like,
I mean, I don't doubt, honestly, I don't doubt Apple's commitment because I mean, remember when, was that 3 years ago? When the Mac Pro was released, the latest iteration? I think it was 3 years ago, 2019. Yeah, sounds about right. They had an internal Apple studio with industry people that worked on probably Apple TV Plus and content by now. And they touted it back then and also the Mac Pro as this is how we connect the products to the real world. because we're using our own products and we're seeing the issues and we're pushing the envelope here. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that has changed.
You wouldn't think so.
Yeah,
I just remember there were things about Final Cut 7 that were just flat out difficult to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And they're a piece of cake in Final Cut 10. And I'm talking about relatively simple things that at my level, you know, I wanted to do. And it's like, okay, I'd go through the tutorials 2 and 3 times and try to get it to work and struggle. And in the new Final Cut, you just did it.
Mm. I also know there was some stuff that was really, I wouldn't say easy in Final Cut Pro 7, but in 10, it was really complicated. Like,
oh yeah,
I heard from some people, they were like, okay, it was either impossible or very, very complicated. And while it wasn't perfect before, at least it worked. So it's been a mixed bag, but that was about like to be expected.
All right. I'm going to move us on to another story because I want to squeeze a third one in before we get on to our cool things. And this story probably has a bigger discussion around it beyond just what the announcement is. So Apple has said that there's new accessibility features coming this fall or later this year for the Apple Watch. And so what we're looking at are features that let you use your iPhone essentially as an interface for your Apple Watch, and then using your iPhone as a broader accessibility tool. Like one of the examples is if you have some sort of vision limitation and it's difficult for you to distinguish like corners and edges and doorways, you can hold your iPhone up and use it to help you navigate to get through doorways or whatever. And okay, so first, I love that Apple is a leader in accessibility features. But second,
they are.
I see this as part of Apple saying, hey, we need to tell you a bunch of stuff before we get to WWDC because we have too much stuff that we're going to announce at WWDC. So we have to get a bunch of it out of the way ahead of time.
I have a feeling, because this is becoming a trend for Apple, that this is not even that they're clearing out stuff for WWDC. This is because they want to highlight this. You know, WWDC, there's so much content, there's so much stuff announced, mm-hmm. that the individual piece sometimes gets lost a little bit, especially if it's something that like accessibility. While a lot of developers and a lot of people care about it, I don't think it has the wide appeal that a lot of the other features have. And this way, because it stands on its own, there's like a dedicated day with releases in Apple. Like if you follow people from Apple and if you follow Apple on Twitter and so on, they talk about a lot of like around this press release about it. And they have videos and stuff. And I think that they're doing this on purpose, because I remember last year they did like, for example, this the Apple Watch hand gesture things and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And they have done something similar this year. So basically you can mirror, or you will be able to mirror your Apple Watch to your iPhone and then use the built-in iPhone accessibility features like external buttons and voice control and all of that to basically see or control what's on your Apple Watch, mm-hmm. things like that. So they're keeping with the trend. And as I said, I have a feeling this is a strategy now. Last year, it was kind of, okay, maybe they wanted to clear it out, but it happens exactly at the same time last year.
That's a good point. And okay, so with that in mind, Patrice, I expect, excuse me, we will have more press releases leading up to WWDC about mm-hmm. About future features.
I think so, yeah. I mean, this press release is really cool. Like if you go in, there's like, voiceover, there's live captions, as I said, the watch mirroring things, the, like a body controller, Like we can help people play a game by combining two game controllers into one, which like I can tell you for yeah, for accessibility is a thing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like there's a lot of cool stuff coming. Like Apple Books apparently is getting more accessible. They're adding like new themes and customization options.
Yeah. And Apple's taken a lot of time here on this news release, more so than I've seen in quite a while, just giving us all this detail, because usually it's just a quick announcement and this is what's happening, and then you kind of find out piecemeal. But now this is very comprehensive. I'm very, very impressed with this.
And do you know why it was posted that day? Because that is Global Accessibility Awareness Day.
Yes, that's right. And so, we're doing something at my office about that too.
So it makes sense that they would leverage the daylights out of, you know, if they had this stuff coming, why wouldn't you announce it then? Why would you save it for GovDub?
Exactly. Before
we forgot about that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, as they have done last year, they will still mention one or two things about from this press release. Like they did that last year, where they showed like one or two of the features that they had already announced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and something like this, where they say coming later this year. Okay, to me, that's Apple speak for this is an iOS 16 feature.
Yeah, we know that.
Yeah. So yeah.
Unless I mean, compared to last year, they did not leak any of the design language. Last year, they had like there was some stuff in there that had the new iOS 15 designs already.
Yeah. Oh, should we look closer at these screenshots that they have? Yeah, I'm not seeing anything.
It looks almost the same. So.
Yeah. Well. Okay. So they learned from last year.
They said they might update it later.
That's true. They might update it later.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, this show and all the others is sponsored by TSO Hosts, which is absolutely awesome on so many levels, not the least of which is that TSO Hosts is a great company hosting websites and helping you manage domains. They're great at what they do. And we can show that they're great at what they do every single week because we are here thanks to them. TSO Hosts gives us the bandwidth we need to be able to stream shows like this to you every single week. They're giving us the hosting space we need so that the server space we need so that we have a place for the website. We have a place for the files so that you can watch or listen to the episodes at your leisure. And without their generous support, there's no way we could do what we do. So we really, really appreciate TSO Hosts. Now, what they're asking from us is so easy. All you have to do is go to your favorite social media network and thank TSO Hosts, acknowledge them for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. That's all they're asking. Now, if it turns out that you happen to need to have a website hosted or you need to buy a domain name, they've got your back. Use the discount code BTN20 when you check out and you'll get a discount on those services, which is fantastic. So here's this awesome company being super generous and helping us out. And all they're asking is that we give them a little online love. And that doesn't seem like a very big ask to me. So we should go do that. And thank you, TSO Hosts, for being our sponsor. Patrice, would you please help me out and tell people where to find the chat?
Yes, of course. There is a very easy way, if you're listening to this live, to go to the chat room. You can listen to this live every Friday at 4 p.m. UK time and for the Mac show, and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time for the big show. And then you just head over to the chat at chat.britishtechnetwork.com and you can talk to us live like some people are doing. It's always fun. But let's say you're listening to this after the fact in your favorite podcast player, because this is a podcast. So this is what this is for. You can, and you're wondering like, how do I get to all the stories that Jeff posted in there and all the cool things that we're going to mention and we always have a link for, or usually have a link for? Like, how do I get to that? Well, there's a very easy way. You head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then there's a little calendar that pops up and you select today's date, which is the 20th of May, 2022. Almost said 2020. 20th of May, 2022.
Please don't make us the last 2 years again.
No, the last 50, you mean.
Yeah.
So, and then you will find everything we've talked about there.
Awesome. Thank you. Yes, I know I can do this, but Patrice, you're so good at it. And it just takes away a little bit of stress for me. So thank you. All right. So it's now time for the cool thing. Patrice, what do you have for us?
Well, I have, I was kind of debating which one to go for, but I'm going to go all in on TV shows this week. And I'm going to pick Star Trek Strange New World. And here's the reason for it. I know a lot of people are original Star Trek fans, and I think this is the show for them. And I'm not going to spoil it, but it is mostly episodic. They said there's some, like, compared to back in the day, there is some character development that happens, which I think is a good thing. So it's kind of a, let's say, in-between show, like in between the long story arcs that other shows are doing and the old way of, like, basically after every episode, everything resets and there's barely a development at all. Like, I mean, the biggest development is when Riker, like, shaves off his, grows a beard. Like, that's a big deal. or shaves it off again. So it's kind of in between. But it is, I mean, it is the Pike era. So it's right before TOS. And they did envision it as, okay, what if we did the original series today? So obviously, a lot of the things look more modern, look more polished. Like the clothes are, like, much better because we simply have better tools available these days. Mm-hmm. But they try to keep the spirit of the show and have those adventures every episode. And what I really, really like, and I posted that on Twitter, and I'm a massive fan of hers since that, is the score for Strange New World. And a lot of, like, sort of the theme music and like everything is by a really, really awesome composer called, and I'm probably going to butcher her name, and I'm very sorry, Nami Melomat, I think. I'm reading that off Twitter, so. But she was on The Ready Room. And she's so thoughtful about how to pick, like, how to create something that is still Strange New World, but picks up all the things and is kind of you can see that this is, okay, this is a precursor to original series, just like Strange New World is a precursor to the original series, kind of. And like the interview they did, like, she's so quirky and funny, and like she just, you can just see that she's completely nerding out, like making mm-hmm. making this hers, but also making this really, really good. So I'm a massive fan of hers and a massive fan of Strange New World. I'm a massive fan of Star Trek anyway, but I really like this show. And it's we've only seen three episodes. So.
Cannot agree more.
Yeah, it's a wonderful Star Trek series.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Make sure you check The Ready Room too. So that latest episode was amazing.
I haven't watched that one yet.
Gave us a good refresher on history.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and I mean, kind of a secondary pick then, The Ready Room. Will Wheaton is kind of the best combination of, he's an actor, he's been on Star Trek, so he has that experience, even if it's not, let's say, recent. Well, that's not true.
That's not true, yeah.
That's not true, and I'm not going to spoil how and why. It's not entirely true, but let's say he hasn't been full-time on a show. But he's the massive nerd.
He's a nerd.
Yeah,
he's a massive Star Trek nerd. And that's the perfect combination for this show. Like, he's nerding out about all the details and everything. And he has this deep knowledge and all of it. So he is really, he is perfect for that show. I think this show was created for you, to be honest.
It probably wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
Love the show. I am so with you. Excellent pick. All right, Chuck, what's your pick?
Before I pick, I'd like to point out that every episode of The Mac Show on the British Tech Network is a strange new world. There's just no way about it. No question about it. No question about it.
I think we got our show title.
Yeah. I a couple weeks ago, I'm going to go with Patrice on TV shows. A couple weeks ago, I picked We Crashed, about the WeWork debacle. And I really, really thoroughly enjoyed that. But I found one that I liked even better, that I never binge anything. And this one I binged. And that is Super Pumped, about the rise of Uber. Now, if I'm sure, in fact, I took the time just to look take a very cursory look. There are parts of this that are fictionalized and enhanced, obviously. But there's also a lot of stuff that is not fictionalized and enhanced. And this is just an incredible, rise and fall and rise again kind of story. If you give it an episode or two, you'll know if it's for you or not. And if it is, I'm betting you're going to binge it too, because it is really just fascinating. I don't want to get into it, because a lot of us, lived through that era, and you may or may not have been paying attention to Uber and some of its challenges and everything that was going on. This gives you a little different perspective on it, both good and bad. And I just, as I've said before, I'm a sucker for business-based stories, and this is a really, really good one.
Okay, so I will add that to my list.
Me too. Showtime.
Bob Beach is saying, at this rate, we're going to have to start calling it this the US TV show.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's unfortunately doesn't look like it's available in the UK yet.
Bob, if it helps you any, I watch this on my iPad. Does
that help? Me too.
All right, Dave, what do you have for us?
I got an app this week. It's called Menu Bar X. And this is a really cool little app that runs in your menu bar and gives you little applets, like pinning little icons to things like YouTube and Spotify and all this other stuff. And it sits right up into the menu bar the whole time, and you can break them out, put them in, and you can have specific things like Google, for instance. You could set a Google little button there and just bring up if you want to do a quick search. You can go to Instagram, you can go to any basic app that's here, and it's got some core items that are in here. That was really cool. It's very lightweight. It's in the App Store, the Mac App Store, for $4.99, but it's in Setapp, so it's free if you have Setapp.
This is really interesting, and I can see places where this would be really handy for me, especially if it works well with Bartender.
Yep. Yeah, it does. I got Bartender running too, and I wanted to move it over so it's closer to the edge here.
That's exactly what I was thinking, Jeff, and because I've already got such a stacked up menu bar, but
we all do. Definitely.
Yeah.
Must be about, guess 15. What I'm playing with later today.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just started playing with it, and it's a little tricky. It is, if you want the basic version, then don't have Setapp. It's free. It's limited features, but it's $4.99 US for in the Mac App Store.
If you don't have awesome. Setapp. Okay. I'll be playing with that later today.
Yep.
Cool. All right. So my cool thing is another TV show for Bob Beach. I am kidding. My cool thing actually is 1Password 8. I've been using it since launch day, and I went into it skeptical, but also kind of open-minded. And the reason I did that is because the app has been rewritten as an Electron app, which means that there are potentially limitations in how the app works, because it's designed to be a cross-platform thing. Or it's developed with a cross-platform development tool. And that creates the possibility of developing something for the lowest common denominator, which means that you can't have all the features that you should. And as it turns out, the way they have done this, 1Password8 on the Mac, it feels like a native Mac application, meaning written with Apple's tools as opposed to Electron. And it's fast, it's responsive, it's super stable, it's doing everything that I expect it to do. And it even added in new features like being able to use 1Password to enter passwords from your database into like system dialogues or places where you couldn't before. So it works like completely system wide now. And I'm really happy with it. So there you go. 1Password8.
I've been running it. It's awesome.
And honestly, if it hadn't performed as well as it does, I would have been more than happy to switch to something else because it's become an Electron app. But it's, you know, it's great. I'm very pleased with it.
So all that controversy we all lived through when they announced they were making that switch was unfounded?
For me, it turns out it was unfounded.
I still disagree with that, but it might be more in principle.
And Patrice, my problem with automatic price increases on subscriptions may very well be in principle as well.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Nice way to take it full circle, Jeff.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. Well, I was going to say, let's do some cool things, but we probably actually all do have more TV shows we could share. So we'll just save those for next week. Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me every week here on the Mac Show on Fridays, also on the Big Show on Thursdays. Everything I'm doing, all the like social media links, the projects, the podcasts, all of that. If you want to buy me a coffee, you can find on thepatrice.com. And if you want to listen to really interesting people that are not me talk about food related stories and memories, then you can head over to my interview show on foodieflashback.com.
Awesome. And it's a great podcast. So if you're someone that ever in your life at any point has eaten food, then this is a show you will enjoy.
Sure.
Chuck, where can people find you?
MacVoices.com is where I talk to lots of interesting people. Right now, we're playing a little bit of catch up from all the MacVoices live shows that happened over the past few weeks and that I got behind on because of the NAB interviews. And so we're working our way through those. So we're back to something a little more current. But even if these are a couple weeks old, in fact, in some ways, I think they may be better. Like they aged like wine because you kind of hear the impressions of the panel with stories that, you know, were then and now you know how they have evolved. And in some cases, it's, you know, it's very prescient. In other cases, it's completely off base. But, you know, the thinking at the time was valid. So I think there's definitely value. And of course, at the very least, there's a lot of entertainment going on as well. We do those shows live Tuesday night on YouTube at youtube.com/MacVoicesTV, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, whatever time that is, wherever you are. Jeff and David are usually there. Patrice shows up when it's not, when she's not working because it's an ungodly hour of the morning for her. And we'd love to have you there as well. And of course, on the socials, I'm at Chuck Joyner and at Mac Voices.
Awesome. Thank you, Chuck. And I'm assuming that the comments that have not aged well and were off base are probably just all mine, which is okay.
No. I was thinking of somebody else, but I'm not going to call anybody out.
Yeah. Don't call out Dave. Come on. No, Dave's always on top of it. Speaking of Dave, where can people find you?
You can find me at InTouchWithIOS at InTouchWithIOS.com. I'm also, as Chuck mentioned, I'm on Mac Voices Live every Tuesday night here on the Mac Show on Fridays. And you can find me on my YouTube channel, which is YouTube.com/DaveG65, where we live stream on Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And you can go back and listen to watch the shows as well. And I'm on Twitter, DaveG65. Thanks, Jeff. Great job.
Awesome. And thanks for being here. Thanks to all of you for being here and being so fantastic and making my Friday morning just loads of fun, as always. You rock. Thanks to everyone that is here with us live. It's awesome that you are here, and I'm so glad you're spending some time with us today. And for everyone that's in the chat room, hey, thanks for being interactive with us during the show. You rock. All of you that watch or listen later, hey, thank you for being part of the family too. It's great that you're here with us, and we really appreciate you. We also appreciate TSO Host, so thank you to them for being our sponsor, and give them some online love and use the discount code BTN20 when you buy your domains or hosting through them and get a nice little discount. And hey, thank you to all of you that are helping keep the Daily News Show happening. I'm so glad that's still part of the BTN lineup. And be sure and check out the photo show, because it's just a fun show. Even if you don't consider yourself a real photographer, it doesn't matter. Just go and check out the show. It's a lot of fun. And you're going to end up learning something that you'll be able to use to make your photos look even better than they already do. So thanks again to everyone. And don't forget to tune in next Thursday for the big show. And then join us again next Friday for the Mac Show. Everyone have an awesome weekend, and we'll see you next week.